Governor Scott Walker will be sworn into a second term this morning during an inauguration ceremony at the Wisconsin State Capitol. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the State Capitol Report on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will talk with Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter Sean Johnson about the major issues facing Governor Walker and the Republican-controlled legislature during 2015, including the transportation budget, property tax cuts, the future of the Government Accountability Board, right to work, and many other issues. And we will welcome any thoughts and questions you might have. What do you think is the most important issue facing the state of Wisconsin this year? What are your biggest hopes or fears for the coming year? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Sean Johnson is Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, and he joins us in the studio. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning.
And you will be co-hosting our coverage of the inauguration live from the State Capitol Rotunda. We will hear Governor Walker, Lieutenant Governor Clayfish, and other elected officials take their oaths of office. This starts at 11 o'clock, and is this all just ceremonial, Sean, or do we expect to hear any big policy statements?
I don't think it's a policy speech in the same way that the State of the State or the budget address is. I mean, the budget address is something that a governor gives every 2 years. It is by its nature a policy-heavy document. It's often where a governor will unveil big budget initiatives, and the budget's the biggest thing that a governor signs every couple of years. So State of the State is often kind of a cheerleading speech. We did this, we're going to do that. I think the inauguration speech is, because it happens so infrequently, not everybody gets to give an inaugural speech. And, in this case, this will be the governor's second. I think he'll want to set a tone in a couple ways. One is sort of, when people look back at this, I think they'll want them to look at his speech and this is how he wants to be remembered. And I also think you have to remember in everything that the governor does right now that he is basically already in the thick of another election, that he is in all likelihood running for president in 2016. There's a very crowded field of Republican candidates who want to do the same thing. And so everything he says is going to be, viewed in that light, is going to be picked apart. And so he also has to think about how do I want to be portrayed on this stage.
Right. So it will be viewed through that lens, mm-hmm. his probable presidential bid. How does it, though, for example, affect what the governor might want to do with our state budget, for example?
The run for president, it's going to make him very averse, I think, to if you're in a crowded Republican primary. You have to think, what is a crowded Republican primary field going to attack me for? Any kind of a tax increase is probably going to be a difficult sell to Republican primary voters in Iowa or New Hampshire or wherever, South Carolina. And so those are possibilities that, might get ruled out. Not that the governor was, exactly keen on those in his first term, but I think those are the types of things that he's not going to necessarily jump for when he's running for president.
Mm-hmm. And what does he do then if the state of Wisconsin is facing a $2 billion plus deficit?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a difficult budget cycle. I think, mostly a lot of agency requests are going to end up being, agencies are going to get basically what they got in the last budget. Some might get a cut. I mean, you won't know until they come out with their budget probably pretty soon because the governor wants to move quick on this. But, there's just not, if you, $2.2 billion is the difference between what agencies want and what the state is expected to generate in revenue. So that does project revenue growth over the next couple of years, but it also projects that spending growth for what agencies want. And so Republicans, the governor included, will say, they're quick to say, look, this is just a wish list. They're not going to get everything. But even if you kind of pare back that wish list and say, okay, well, we're just going to give them the essentials. Medicaid is huge, and that's a cost to continue budget, basically. That's where the biggest chunk of the increase is coming from, or the biggest, piece of that spending is coming in Medicaid. And I think most of that is stuff that the state can't back away from. They can't say, well, you're not getting that wish list this year. No, those are cost to continue programs for state federal program. So they don't have that option.
Yeah, you mentioned there's no way in heck that the governor's going to want to do an income tax increase or any kind of tax increase. But there was a time when he was looking at getting rid of the income tax. Is that still on the table?
I don't think it is. If you just listen to what he said publicly, he still wants to cut taxes in this next budget. I think he's going to go to the property tax. Remember everything that he said. It may be a situation where, we do have huge Republican majorities in the legislature now, and so it could be that the governor introduces his budget, keeps income taxes flat. Legislators say, look, no, we were elected to cut income taxes, and we're going to do it. Here's what we want to do, governor, and they send it to his desk with something like that. But from what the governor said, he wants to cut property taxes because he says that's what he hears the most complaints about. I think, most people would, lawmakers would probably agree with that. And so to cut property taxes, there are ways you can do that without, taking a big hit on the state budget. I guess the flip side of that is it does end up putting more pressure on local budgets if you put limits in that way. But I just don't think there's not a lot of – if you're already in a budget hole, it is very hard to cut income taxes, which digs the hole deeper.
Yeah. He's also talked about consolidating state agencies. What does that look like now?
It doesn't look like, from what he said, that there would be huge consolidations. I mean, it would be consolidations of agencies that aren't necessarily well known by the general public, with other agencies that aren't necessarily known by the general public. I mean, we'll see what he's going to do, but he has tempered expectations on that a little bit. He said it's not something that's going to save like hundreds of millions of dollars. I mean, it's their consolidations. I think they'll let him say we're creating a government that works better or leaner. The themes that he's hit since he's been elected. But again, he wants to get this done quickly. He wants to, if he's running for president, and every sign is that he is running for president, he wants to get to Iowa. And if you're talking about major consolidations and a major reorganization of state government, that doesn't help you get the budget done, in June.
Is the state legislature going along with his request to hurry it up on the state budget?
They have said that they'll go along as much as they can, but that they're not going to cede their powers or their responsibilities. So, when it comes to the legislature's budget committee, the Joint Finance Committee, for example, they typically hold hearings throughout the state, and I think they like that. They go to lawmakers' districts. Could be they go to vulnerable lawmakers' districts, vulnerable Republican lawmakers' districts, and they can say, look, we held a hearing over here. I don't know how they always get chosen, but I do get a sense that they like holding those hearings. I'm not saying those hearings go a long way to shaping the budget, because people get up there and they're limited to about 2 minutes apiece to testify on the budget. And, hundreds of people testify. I think it's kind of a show. But I don't think they're going to give that up. And I know they're not going to do anything before the Legislative Fiscal Bureau can produce its budget papers, its issue papers on the budget. And essentially what the Fiscal Bureau does is it takes the budget from the governor's office and it kind of translates it into English. And it gives the legislature different options on how they could vote. Well, you could do this, you could do that. They're not going to give that up.
We have a news break in just a minute or so, and after the news, we'll get into some real, some specifics when it comes to transportation and education and right to work and government benefits. But in the minute before news, Sean, we don't know exactly what Governor Walker is going to be focusing on in his inaugural speech today, or do we?
No, we don't. I think we can take guesses, but we don't know what it's going to be. I haven't seen a copy of the address.
All right. We will talk more with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, after we check news. And we will welcome any thoughts or questions that you have on this, the first day of Governor Walker's second term and the new legislative term. And wondering what your hopes and fears and concerns are for the state of Wisconsin when it comes to public policy. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the State Capitol Report here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is Inauguration Day in Wisconsin, and in our State Capitol Report, we are examining what we might expect from Governor Walker's second term. I'm Joy Cardine, along with Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter Sean Johnson, talking about what the year might have in store in terms of possible policy changes, and welcoming any questions you might have. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. And a reminder that today at 11 o'clock on Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television, you can catch the inauguration of Governor Scott Walker live from the Wisconsin State Capitol Rotunda. We will hear from Governor Walker, Lieutenant Governor Clayfish, and other elected officials as they take their oaths of office. Our coverage is hosted by Wisconsin Public Radio's Sean Johnson and Wisconsin Public Television's Zach Schultz. That starts at 11 today on Wisconsin Public Radio and Television. Well, Sean, we're going to examine some of the issues where there might be policy changes in Wisconsin, or at least what we know of so far. What is the very latest on right to work? We know that a Republican legislator is going to introduce this legislation that would make Wisconsin a right to work state. Which, by the way, you explain it. What exactly is right to work?
Right to work laws ban mandatory union shops in the private sector. So, right now we're not a right to work state. So if you go to work at some union shops in the private sector, they can require you to join the union. The thought behind that requirement is, that union is there to ensure that you're trained, to bargain on your behalf. And so, if you're going to benefit from that, you're going to be a part of it. The right to work law would say, no, it's the employee's choice whether or not he or she wants to join the union. Unions say it's essentially a death knell for them.
Yeah. The critics are saying that this is a death knell, but it's also it is a move to further weaken unions is their charge, right?
Right. It's not coming out of nowhere. There was that famous video that was released in the governor's first term, a little clip from a documentary about his that's kind of centered around his first run for office. Movie was about Janesville, but followed the governor talking to Diane Hendricks, one of his big donors, and she asks him, when are you going to make us a right to work state? Without having the full transcript in front of me, I think the phrase that everybody remembers is
first the public.
Yeah, he said, but he uses the phrase divide and conquer. So, mm-hmm. The governor's sponsored right to work legislation as a freshman member of the legislature. So it's not like this is just this is just coming out of nowhere. I mean, this is something that he ideologically supports. And, you know, if you're running a Republican primary for president, you know, and you want to be the most conservative, yeah. It is something that,
But yet he's been saying, you know, no, I don't want to, I don't support right to work now. I don't want the legislature to concentrate on that now. That's not my priority now.
Yeah, I mean, we could play a little clip here of, I mean, this is a pretty good example of what the governor says every time he's asked about right to work. This was during a chat with media in December.
My position is right now, I think for the attention it would draw in the state, just like a reopening Act 10, it would be a distraction. And so I've asked them publicly and privately not to pursue that, and certainly not to do it right out of the gate, but not to pursue it, because I think it would distract from our ability to take on the other reforms we've talked about.
So people are reading into that a couple different ways. There are some Democrats who are saying, he's just saying that, you know, that in Michigan, Rick Snyder, the governor there, said that for however long, a couple years, said it's not, I think it'd be a distraction. I think it'd be a distraction. And then came to his desk and he signed it in pretty fast order. So, I mean, there are some Wisconsin Democrats that are saying that's what's happening here. On the other hand, you know, I think you had a different situation here in that Governor Walker is likely running for president, and he already has sort of that big accomplishment for Republican voters, you know, in his back pocket. He already has Act 10, you know, he you know, he had all the protests and everything that went with it. The downside for him, if he does a right to work bill, is that you're going to have protests here again. They're probably not going to be the size or the same tone that you had in Act 10, but he doesn't want the country thinking that every time he does something, the Capitol blows up, you know? He's been through that already, and I'm not sure it's what he's looking for a presidential agenda.
So he's asking the legislature to back off. Is the legislature going to back off?
Yeah. This is a fairly long clip here from a Senate Majority Leader, Scott Fitzgerald, who in the past might have said, I don't know if we have the votes. I got to talk to my members, stuff like that. I mean, he is a majority leader who kind of reflects where his caucus is at. Well, his caucus, the Senate Republicans, just got a lot more conservative in this last election. And so Scott Fitzgerald was asked about, you know, the governor's comments and where he stands during an appearance on WTMJ radio in, I believe it was early December. Here's what Scott Fitzgerald had to say then.
Last session, we kind of were able to move kind of through a number of issues, and we never really got there. And part of it was kind of this idea that, well, with Act 10 and with it blowing up the Capitol and everything that went along with Act 10, that there probably was a willingness to just wait because it was a distraction. I mean, that's the point the governor, I think, is trying to make, is that if you're somebody outside of Wisconsin looking at this state and thinking about expanding your business or growing your business, and you saw everything that played out in the media, the national media, and you know, Walker's got a name because of Act 10, that you're not going to necessarily want to locate here. It's just mm-hmm. not certain here. But we've kind of moved beyond that again, and I think that's why with, you know, new people in the caucus and with some of the veterans that quite honestly don't care anymore, that if the crowds show up and that if the Capitol blows up again, we just don't care. We've been through the recalls. We've been through it all. If we're going to do it, let's do it.
We don't care, huh?
I thought that the comment there toward the end that Senator Fitzgerald made, you know, we've been through it. We just don't care if the Capitol, you know, blows up again. The pretty striking comment there. And so that's the public position that Scott Fitzgerald is staking out on this issue. And he is one of the two most powerful members of the state legislature. And the going thinking, has been that, you know, the assembly is the more conservative body. You have a lot of newcomers to state government there, and any push for a right to work would go there, and that the resistance might be in the Senate. So to have Scott Fitzgerald come out there and say, let's do it, that really turned some heads. I'll say that since then, you know, the governor's position hasn't really, his publicly stated position, again, hasn't really changed. I think, you know, I think sort of the wild card here is the governor said that he had face-to-face meetings with almost 100 state legislators in the month of December, leading up to Christmas. I would presume that includes the majority, if not all, of the Republican caucus in the Assembly and the Senate. You know, if the governor legitimately does not want this to come up and he sits down and privately tells rank-and-file lawmakers, I would appreciate it if you don't move on this session, you can do it later, that can go a long way toward bottling something like this up. If the topic didn't come up and he's just kind of letting them do what they want to do, then, you know, you could see a right-to-work bill this session.
Let's take a call from John in Appleton. Hello, John.
Good morning, everybody, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Appreciate all you do. I'm wondering if there's going to be any movement toward school funding, bringing districts up that need more resources to get those resources. That's my first question. And then secondly, DWD has, for many years, lacked the professional counseling services that state residents need when they're unemployed and looking for new work. I'm wondering if that is going to be addressed at all in the upcoming session. Thanks.
Thank you very much, John. For two questions. Can we start with education, mm-hmm. Sean? Because I know there are a lot of other issues involving education that we are going to talk about too. Is the school funding formula going to be tackled, as far as you know?
Maybe. Nips and tucks here and there, but in terms of more resources for schools, you know, maybe if it's very targeted. I mean, if they can say, look, we realize there's a problem with, you know, rural school districts with declining enrollment, for example, we need to do more there. Maybe that's the type of thing that you would see done. But remember, I mean, they're already saying that the agency requests for budgets are wish lists and they're not going to get everything they want. The, you know, quote, wish list for the school's budget was drawn up by the Department of Public Instruction, Tony Evers, who wants to see an increase for schools, more resources for schools. You know, with a $2.2 billion projected deficit, I'm not sure that's going to happen. I'm not sure that this is going to be the session for it. DWD, you know, if you're talking about more resources for counseling, that's the type of thing that probably, you know, not seeing any kind of budget requests or fiscal bureau memo right in front of you, it doesn't sound like the kind of thing that would cost a bundle. And if the governor wants to say we're doing more for workforce development, you know, that's the type of thing that could be a low cost option for him. I just haven't heard him talk about that.
Yeah. Well, let's do talk about some of the possible education changes. Is the governor backing off on wanting to repeal Common Core standards?
He says he's not. It sounds like a little bit. I mean, Common Core is this thing that every Republican lawmaker seemed to be talking about last year, and especially during the campaign, talked about extensively. That Republicans wanted to repeal Common Core. There was this thought during the campaign that Governor Walker was having a hard time energizing his base, that they were kind of, sitting on their hands to a degree. And so at some point during the campaign, he puts out a very terse statement, says, I support the repeal of Common Core. And so now, you know, it sounds like what he's supporting is, you know, maybe some of that. But if you're somebody who wants to block schools from implementing Common Core, that's not what he's talking about. He's talking about, you know, wiping it from the statutes, but giving local schools the option of what they want to do. Here's, you know, what the governor had to say about Common Core in a year-end interview.
To me, the repeal of Common Core, my position's no different than what I said previously, with one caveat. I said before I wanted to repeal Common Core, I still want to repeal any reference in the statutes, any reference to the administrative code, and any requirement in the testing that Common Core be required to be used at the local school district level. The distinction is, earlier this past year, I had said that I'd like to put together a group, work with the legislature on putting together a panel that would replace standards that were set by people from outside of the state of Wisconsin by a panel made up of people within the state. Talking to parents, educators, taxpayers, others who are concerned about this issue, it is clear to me that, people are overwhelmingly saying is not only do we not want out-of-state folks, is they really want the decision made at the local level. They want parents, taxpayers, educators at the local school district to be able to determine what their standards are and not have it dictated to them by someone either at the national or at the state level. And that makes some sense to me.
So let's think about what he's saying there. I mean, he's the big dig against Common Core. I mean, one of them is that you have these local school districts and you have these national standards that are the critic's argument is that they're being imposed on these local school districts. The governor wanted to replace those with standards drawn up at the state level. He's now saying, well, what I've heard is that local districts don't want that either. What could that mean in practice? It could mean that these local districts who have said they like Common Core, who have said they spent a lot of money implementing Common Core already, means that they could stick with Common Core. It just wouldn't be required of them by the state.
All right. Well, news is coming up again in a couple of minutes, so let's try to breeze through some of the other education issues. Paul on Facebook comments that none of the pressing issues facing the state of Wisconsin are on the Republican agenda. Failed voucher schools, stealing taxpayer money, and having only 2% of the enrolled students at reading at a grade level. Sarcastically saying that's a problem. What's likely to happen when it comes to voucher schools and the possible expansion of that program?
You are going to see an expansion statewide. They expanded it last session, but they put a 1,000 student cap on enrollment statewide. Much different legislature right now. I mean, they're going to expand it. It's going to be bigger. I think the question is whether they'll expand it to another cap of some, some level of students statewide or some percentage of students, or whether they'll just take the caps off and say, it's fair game. That's going to happen, though.
Are the private schools involved in the voucher program going to have to follow the same accountability standards as public schools?
I think that's something that the governor has said he wanted to see going back to some of his early speeches in his first term. One of his early State of the State addresses, or his first or second address, I think. It hasn't happened, though. I mean, the legislature has never agreed on it. I think that's one of those where the devil's in the details. It sounds good. And I think one of the difficulties as they start to work on this is you end up affecting school districts that are near and dear to some of these legislators. I mean, they say, like, I like the idea of an accountability bill. This all looks good on paper, and then they look at what it might mean for a district in their legislative district, a school in their legislative district. And, these accountability bills they have been, as they've been drafted, they've been kind of punitive in nature. And so, I think what they decide on there, I don't know. I mean, the voucher lobby is very powerful, and they're going to want to have final say on any accountability bill.
Yeah. Can you tell us in a minute if the University of Wisconsin system is going to get what it wants when it comes to the budget?
They want, just shy of $100 million increase in state funding. State lawmakers, at least in their early comments, have said, I'm thinking more like no increase and continued tuition freeze, and work down these fund balances that were the subject of much scrutiny last session. What happens with the UW will be another big story this coming year.
We are talking with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, on this inaugural edition of our State Capitol Report. More after the news. The This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, about the second term of Governor Scott Walker. Governor Walker begins his second term officially when he is inaugurated at the state capitol this morning at 11 o'clock. Sean also co-hosting our coverage of that ceremony. You can hear it here live at 11 on Wisconsin Public Radio. It will also be broadcast on Wisconsin Public Television, talking about the various policy issues facing the state of Wisconsin and some of the possible changes we might see in this in the year 2015. Sean, we haven't gotten to a number of big issues, including the transportation budget. I know the Department of Transportation says it needs more money to maintain the roads and to, you know, meet the transportation needs for the state of Wisconsin, and proposed, well, gosh, all sorts of fee hikes and different changes. What are we likely to see there? Is the governor going along with the Department of Transportation on that request?
In a word, no. I mean, the DOT's budget request included various forms of gas tax increases, diesel tax increase, a new tax on new vehicle purchases. And so, you know, those are a couple, you know, those particular tax fee increases are something that the governor's already said I'd rather not see. I think what strikes me is that, you know, this is a governor who's basically said we need lower taxes, no new taxes, you know, over and over and over again since he's been on the public stage. But when it comes to the transportation budget, he's not ruling out new revenue. Revenue's a soft way of saying taxes or fees, right? So here's just you know, an example of what an idea that he floated in year-end interviews about how you might pay for transportation.
I prefer not to have a gas tax, but, you know, there might be other ways, other alternatives to what the DOT's put on the table, whether it's looking at sales taxes that are already collected, not a new sales tax, but sales taxes already collected on automobile-related purchases, whether it's on repairs, auto parts, vehicle purchases, things that the state collects today. It would be no new tax out there, but in terms of revenue streams. But, of course, the balance with that is if those revenue streams are put in, as many states do, so we wouldn't be alone if we pursued that. Many other states go beyond just the gas tax and the vehicle registration fee. But if we do that, that means that's money that less comes out of the general fund. And so when there are challenges in both the transportation budget and in the general fund budget, we've got to balance all of our needs.
So just step back for a minute. I mean, he's talking about, you know, that sales tax revenue currently goes to the general fund. The general fund is what pays for schools, health care, University of Wisconsin, prisons. That is the fund that we talk about the most. It has that $2.2 billion deficit. So if you go and say, we need this sales tax revenue to pay for transportation, actually, we're going to shift it over here, just creates a bigger deficit. As he mentions, he alludes to there, creates a bigger deficit in the general fund. But that's an idea that he was floating to multiple media outlets and in year-end interviews. I mean, kind of a trial balloon that he's putting out there.
Yeah, he says he doesn't really prefer a gas tax increase. What about the vehicle registration fee increase idea?
It's not something that he brought up. I mean, I asked him about that, and he said something we'll look at. I asked him about it just because, I mean, that is a fee increase that Republicans have voted for in the not-too-distant past. That was when the legislature was under split party control and Jim Doyle was governor. That is something that, you know, Democrats were able to get Republicans to go along with. It's obviously a different situation right now with big Republican majorities, but that, you know, potentially that's one that they could couch as a user fee. And it's not a tax increase. It's a registration fee. It goes to pay for the roads. I just don't know where the sentiment's going to be on that.
All right. Well, let's move on to the Government Accountability Board. We know that Assembly Speaker Robin Voss said there are going to be changes, and even said something along the lines of Kevin Kennedy, the executive director of the Government Accountability Board, has to go. What's likely to happen there?
Everybody seems to be singing from the same hymnal now. I mean, this is something that not, you know, like last session, for example, Governor Walker would say when asked about it, it's not on my radar, which is, you know, his way of saying next question, I don't want to talk about this. Now he's not saying that. I mean, this is something where Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald have kind of taken the lead. They've both come to their statements publicly have come to the point where they're saying we could have another partisan board. Right now, the Government Accountability Board is composed of six former judges, reserve judges, technically. It's a nonpartisan board. It was drawn up to be as nonpartisan as possible. Voss and Fitzgerald both saying now maybe we could go back to the elections board, which was composed of partisan appointees, because they got stuff done is the message that you're hearing from GOP lawmakers. So now that there's been this audit that shows that there are some issues at the Government Accountability Board where they haven't fulfilled some of their statutory responsibilities, the governor's weighing in on this, and he seems to be open to some kind of a partisan board.
You get people who, even though they were former judges who had to run for office, most judges in the state are appointed. Most, once they're appointed, never really run an election. So you have a board made up of people who, you know, had judicial background. I think the initial intention when they first made this was to have people who were objective, above the fray on that. But it also means you have people who are making decisions about elections decisions who probably have never run or been a part of an actively contested election. And so, you know, that was one of the benefits in the past was, yeah, the old elections board had people who are political people on there, but it had a balance. It had Republicans and Democrats. It didn't have a slant one way or the other. The toss-up vote was one that came from the Supreme Court. The Chief Justice was able to point that. But at least you had people who had actually run elections, who understood what elections were. To me, maybe the answer is a hybrid between the two out there, is that you want some objective form, but you don't want people so objective that they don't have, or so viewed as so objective that they don't have any understanding of how the election process runs.
All right. So so Governor Walker is open to changes then.
Yeah, he's saying, I didn't set that up so well. He's talking about the current board. He has the appointment power of the six nonpartisan judges, but he's saying they come from a list forwarded to him by the judiciary. It's a fairly short list, and you know, the governor's basic point is maybe we can have a hybrid, have some of those nonpartisan appointees, some of them partisan. So he has kind of hopped on that bandwagon now. You know, the Government Accountability Board, it's that the audit pointed out some problems that need to be addressed, but it is an election model that has received much acclaim nationally, as this is the way other states ought to do it, because it was created to insulate the board, the elections board, from the decision makers or from the people being elected. So it sounds like that might change this session.
Well, speaking of elections, we will have a statewide spring election for Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice. Set that up for us.
Yeah, these are very low turnout affairs. And, you know, you're talking, if you get 20% turnout for this election, it's pretty good. We had really high turnout for the Justice Prosser election because it was in the middle of, you know, the craziness over Act 10 that was sort of seen as a referendum. That was a few years ago. But this is probably going to be a low turnout affair. Justice Ann Walsh Bradley is going to announce her re-election campaign tomorrow in Wausau. She faces a challenge from Rock County Circuit Judge James Daly. Justice Bradley is one of the two, you know, more liberal judges on the court. I mean, the court is firmly in the control of conservative judges, or I guess Republican-leaning judges, maybe be another way to put it, with a kind of a swing vote in the middle with Justice Crooks. So, I mean, the liberals need Justice Bradley to win because, you know, when you lose these are 10-year terms. So if they want to have any hope of having the court go their way again in the not-too-distant future, they can't afford to lose the people They've already got on there, Justice Abrahamson and Justice Bradley.
Yeah. You know, I saw that now, well, outgoing Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen was predicting that when we vote for president in 2016, we will be showing a voter ID. The Supreme Court's going to rule on voter ID sometime this year?
Yeah, we had a pretty dramatic court ping pong battle, I guess, last year where voter ID was on again, off again. Finally, the U.S. Supreme Court stepped in and didn't really explain themselves, but said, look, we're going to keep the status quo for now, and the status quo being we're not going to have a voter ID for the November election, so we didn't. But this is something now that it's in the U.S. Supreme Court's hands, and they could well decide to implement voter ID. Wisconsin's case is a different case than the one that the U.S. Supreme Court has decided on before, but the appeals court, it was a split appeals court, but the appeals court thought that it was similar enough that Wisconsin's voter ID law ought to be upheld.
Sean, we have just a minute left to go. Will Governor Walker be going to Iowa this month?
It's a possibility. There's a political event, I think January 24th, coming up soon, where the governor might be there. He told another reporter that he's aware that's on the calendar. It's on a weekend, so it would work out well for him. And I think you got to look at where else the governor might be going this year, especially after the budget's done. You could see him all over the place. Even said last week that, you know, he might go to Israel for, that would be for state business, but I imagine that there would be potentially some political interest there for him too.
A little foreign policy experience there.
Right.
Thanks very much, Sean.
Thank you.
Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter and the co-host of our coverage at 11 o'clock this morning on Wisconsin Public Radio of the inauguration of Governor Scott Walker. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.